Right now, it is time for the Media Beat with David Terechuk. David joins us on a Friday morning, rebroadcast, of course, during the weekend and also during the week in the noontime hour. You can find David at his own website, themediabeat.us, and also you can find him as a television correspondent for PBS, reporting on ethics and belief. And I do believe he is joining us this morning once again from Italy. Good morning, David.
Good day to you. It's the middle of the afternoon here, and I'm in Tuscany, Italy, where the temperature is a very moderate 86 degrees compared with landlocked Connecticut, I guess, huh?
Well, you know, whenever I hear the name Tuscany, this is terrible. I think of the Seinfeld episode when Elaine was going out with a conductor who had a summer home in Tuscany. just how Tuscany always comes to my mind.
I wonder if it was anywhere near here. I don't know. But there are lots of summer homes here. And there are. It's funny. The British people began coming here in great numbers. Back in the 1990s was a big surge of it. So much so, in fact, that the wine of this, not entirely of this region, but clearly would get drunk a lot by these British people who would come and take up new second homes here, that the British nickname for the place became Chianti Shire.
I like that. Well, you know, I guess one of the first stories I want to touch on is we have our first, is it the first woman European head of the European Union?
Absolutely. Yeah. Former defense minister in Germany. The president of the European Commission. And it's arguable, I suppose, how powerful the position is. But a very strong symbolic position for someone to take and for anyone to take. And, of course, it's really important that it should now be a woman. You know, even old Europe can advance.
Well, now, is there any chance that she would want to further her political career by being a possible replacement for Angela Merkel in the future?
She will certainly have increased her stature yet more in her own home country and after she's served her term. It's not unusual for top European officials to take advantage of the greater visibility they get and then, ramp up their political career back in their own countries. That's been true for a few British politicians, never at the absolute top rank, but commissioners sometimes have gotten. There was a George Thompson in Britain who established a much greater visibility by being a very prominent commissioner for Europe. Other countries too, because they all take their turns to occupy seats on a broad range of commission positions. No Brit has ever been a president, of course. I think this is the first time there's been a German president also. So it will be interesting to watch. And certainly it's yet another affirmation of the fact that while there may be 28 countries in the European Union, and soon to be only 27, of course, because Britain, which was a somewhat half-hearted joiner in the first place back in the 1970s, they are supposed to be saying a final goodbye, sayonara, on Halloween of all times, October 31st this year. Britain will now bring the number, will leave and bring the overall number down to 27.
David?
Now.
There you go.
I'm hearing you, Marshall, but I'm not sure that you can hear me.
Well, I didn't hear you for a few seconds there as the connection dropped out for a few seconds.
I'm glad we're back together. No, Britain's supposed to leave by Halloween, and so Europe will only be 27 countries. But still, it's a very lofty position to occupy, to be the president of Europe. Back in Nixon's presidency, Secretary of State Henry Kissinger had the big question, who should I call? What phone number should I call if I want to call the top people in Europe? Well, nowadays, I think you can probably assume that the president of Europe is not exactly anything like the presidency of the United States, but I think it's a central kind of status and affirmation, as I was about to say before we lost contact. It's affirmation again that while there are 27 countries in Europe, or will be after October 31st, the French and the Germans are pretty much the dominant force in that grouping.
Well, speaking about Halloween and Britain, what's the latest in the leadership of the Conservative Party and stuff like that?
Well, Boris Johnson still seems to be the front runner. Some interesting investigative journalism is taking place now. I guess it shouldn't surprise anybody, certainly not in the United States, after their experiences and Americans' experiences in 2016. But it turns out that investigative work by the Reuters news agency, not always to the forefront of investigative work. They tend to report daily events like a good old-fashioned news agency that they are. But sometimes they put special time aside and will investigate thoroughly a particular topic. And they've come up with the fact that Boris Johnson is very close. There may not be absolute defining proof of a financial connection, but he's very close friends with a Russian oligarch. And that's the new investigative story that's dropping today from Reuters in Britain.
Well, let's move from Britain to the big circus under the big tent. That's our own United States of America. Once again, the divide in this country just seems to get deeper and deeper and deeper.
Well, I have to report that the Europeans here, European media, are astonished at the performance of the American media over the last few days. Getting involved even in a debate, for all things, a debate about whether or not the president is a racist, or whether or not it is right for the media to use the label racist, when it is pretty clear to all Europeans who observe this, and they're very familiar with racism, after all. The shock and and the disturbed reactions of Europeans is something to behold. And so, why are the Americans debating this? Isn't it so obvious now that there's nothing to debate? But I'm not sure if the American media are really hip to what the Europeans' view of them might be. I think it's become a little like inside baseball working on American politics at the moment. Everyone is so careful and so anxious to be as detailed as they possibly can, and perhaps in the hope of not offending too many people. I'm not sure what it is, but it seems to me 3 weeks away from the country, and I'm looking back and thinking, why are people even questioning this notion now? Do we have a racist president or not? Is this actually open for debate anymore? It doesn't look that way from Europe.
I think the tipping point for me, and finally saying, stating it, and actually feeling it for myself, was the fact that when you tweet something, anybody can tweet anything in a moment and be of poor taste and poor judgment, but over and over and over again. But when you lead a rally, and at that rally, you sit there for 20 seconds while people are chanting, send her back. Well, we've lost our connection.
Yes, talking about someone who came to the United States at the age of 12 and is now a citizen. Yes, that is an ugliness that's very hard to credit. But it was there, and as you say, recorded the full 13 to 20 seconds of the president appearing to revel in this chant. Yes, very little doubt about that.
And the striking thing about that is you don't have to be an academic scholar to know that the Constitution of the United States gives duly elected representatives, as a matter of fact, every single citizen of the United States, the right to voice their personal opinion. But to trace the lineage back, David, to where you come from, and know that the main person that he was talking about actually has been an American citizen far longer than the First Lady of the United States. That's what opens up the lines where you have to say, what's the difference between the First Lady and what's the difference between the representative that really was focused in on, or all four of them? And it is indeed color.
Yep. Well, I don't think there was a single black person to my acquaintance who was surprised by Trump winning the election in 2016, although an awful lot of white people were shocked and horrified. The question being asked so often at that point was whether or not he would win and what the defining feature might be. And the answer for many people was, especially if they were black themselves, how many angry white people are there out there and will they vote? That seems to be the same calculation that Donald Trump and his team are calculating now. They feel that they can do it again, and this time even more openly. Resentful, apparently threatened feeling. White people are the force that they can rely upon to put Trump over the finishing line again. I hope that they're wrong. Let's see.
It's you know, the dangerous thing, and we have gotten to dangerous territory now, the mob mentality. When you start focusing in on a member of Congress, send her back, all of a sudden you have to very, very carefully look at the security for that congressperson, because you exactly there is an angry...
And more broadly than that, too. One has, I mean, it's hard not to have fear about the entire nature of the campaign from now on, and what kind of viciousness is likely to get released. We've seen it, and we'll see it again, and the danger is that we'll see it much more widely evident as the campaign goes on. We've got a little bit more than a year to go before the next election, and an awful lot of terrible things, I fear, could happen in that time.
Yeah, it's pretty easy for me to sit here and look at this, but I think your bird's eye view, especially where you've been out of the country for the past couple of weeks, and you can actually almost like look into the fishbowl and get a total different look. What we used to call it in radio, it's nice to bring in an expert from afar to get a clearer view on things that are going on, and you're sitting in that catbird seat right now.
Well, things tend to come into sharper focus with distance. You may miss some of the details, but and I may be painting with too broad a brush, but I honestly don't think so. If Americans themselves just ask themselves about their own constitution, particularly about that phrase associated with the Constitution, a pluribus unum, out of many comes one. The whole point about America and its whole difference from Europe, from which we sprang as a country, I now use we, meaning Americans, the whole idea...
The whole idea is that we are all part of... I see it. It picks up again, but it is quite interesting to hear the different angles. And it is also, to me, quite interesting that what is covered here has very little to do with what is covered there and vice versa. So that's just part of it. And I wanted to ask David what the Good Morning Fair was like. We know that there's Good Morning Britain, but is there Good Morning Tuscany, or is there Good Morning Rome? Or are people still a little more attached to the rhythms of... Definitely remember from his last conversation last week when he said, you know, people do put their phones down at supper, and there's still more of a texture to the human interaction that we seem to not have as much here. Though I suppose when you move out of the city, you should at least have that opportunity. Although some of my favorite times here have been when people have come from the city and just been horrified that the cell service on, in my case, Music Mountain, isn't all that it could be. But one never knows. At all events, I am certain that he will. He may be gone one more week. I think that it's sort of fascinating that when he was in the nunnery, he had the best service 3 weeks ago, and then he has moved around a little bit, and it has not been as useful. So, no luck?
No luck.
You want to try one more Skype thing? Or is it because the cell is really, really dodgy. I'm not sure what exactly what service.
Well, you seem there to be reaching me now.
Luck, great luck. So now that we've snagged you, now that we've harpooned you, I've got one other question that I've, because it's not one other question. It's something that I was meaning to steer towards anyway. Back to. From everything that I am reading, it seems that Bojo is a foregone conclusion. They can come up with oligarchs. They can come up, doesn't matter. I will be struck to
see.
You're
probably right. Probably right, Jill. Yeah.
It's just the way that it's being written about, and this is where I, inside baseball, is like, yeah, okay, they're done. This is next. But what I am also noticing is that suddenly Kelshok, it's being presented as, wow, people's positions have hardened. Either they want to leave or they want to stay, but they don't want another referendum. They don't want, and this is how it's being reported. And what I am aching to find out is what actual people are thinking. And by actual people, I don't mean in clusters of either. I don't mean in polarized clusters. I am really waiting for someone anywhere on the planet to report on the vast center moderate. And it's a total yawn.
The vast moderate center of Britain, you're asking for an illumination of?
Pick a country, any country.
Not to get that.
Pick any place on the planet, I think you're likely not to get it.
Oh, sure. Okay. Okay, well, maybe extremism is just the nature of the game right now. Though I don't believe for one minute that somewhere like Britain is entirely divided by, one extreme and its opposite.
I agree.
I think there is a great morass of people in the middle, and it's probably true also that doesn't get very reported so much because, of course, extremes tend to be that much more interesting for journalists to write about.
Except what you get.
That's all.
You get massive underrepresentation. Now, and I know this from here. Are you gone again? Yep. And what I was going to finish saying to him, and maybe he can hear me, I know this from here because I have a lot of Californians who, obviously have very Californian-esque positions, which means that are just so exhausted. Not exhausted, it's bored. They're bored senseless. They're terminally bored.
Sure, and there is a very large amount of apathy in Britain over Brexit, although you wouldn't believe it from reading the press. You think there's nothing activates the British public more than
right.
the Brexit issue.
Exactly.
But in fact, people are tired of it, rather in the same way that they got tired in Northern Ireland of always being
bombed
in a form of civil war.
Yeah, no, it's no kidding. And this is where, but I suspect that there is no profitable model for it. But you end up, I always liken it to going to a Broadway show that is about 5 days away from closing. The energy at that show is so different than it was on opening night, even if it's the hit of hits of hits of hits. It's just different. It's
well, sure. The fight over Europe, in some ways, has been going on ever since Britain entered Europe in the 1970s. But the fight over the last 2 to 3 years has been so exhausting, I think, for the British public that they do just want it to be over. There is a growing, not a fast growing, but a growing number of people who are now tilting towards Remain. And it's just possible, but it will require a lot more energy than people seem capable of giving it in political circles in Britain now. It's possible that they may push for another referendum, and one of the political parties, the one not in government right now, might actually pin its colours to the mast, saying, we now definitely want to offer the public the opportunity to remain. I think that's a long stretch, but there is a movement towards that position now, which is remarkable. And I think it's largely the result of just sheer exhaustion.
Yes, and just reading off this thing, this is a quote, it's a Politico London playbook, but View from the Regions, it's called. In our clusters of marginal seats in the Leave-supporting Northwest and East Midlands, voters comfortably backed no deal over revoking Article 50. In our clusters in Remain-supporting Scotland and London, voters preferred to cancel Brexit. A further delay to seek a different outcome, no one is interested in. So it's... And I'm paraphrasing, but that's the essence. And because I see that as a microcosm of what we are now going to be doing. This morning I realized that after we get through August, which is the silly season, we've got another couple of debates, it's still a year away. It's still a year away. This
for the American election?
Yes,
yeah,
this has been going on
for... But we're already getting to the hand-wringing stage, aren't we?
Right. So can anyone extrapolate? Can anyone project forward in 8 months? Do you realize how if people find it tedious now, this is going to have to be...
Yeah, I fear so. I vacillate myself between... expecting people just to get so exhausted by it in the United States as they have in Britain, their issues, and another position where I think everything will be so hyperbolic and so frighteningly extreme that we'll be so agitated that I think we may even see a very, you know, a hot summer and a hot fall of trouble in the streets of an extreme kind.
And then what will be interesting...
I'm in one of my negative phases, an anxious phase at the moment.
Right, and then what I always go to, and I have, and I'm not going to say that this is always going to... that this is always going to work, but I, once again, in my unscientific sampling, you've got a massive underreported center. So it's almost as though people are being irresponsible in fomenting this extremism. Like, go outside, go talk to 10 people, see what those 10 people really give a rap about. Because, as I say, in my unscientific sampling, 9.3 of them are just like, oh, sit down, shut up. I don't have enough money to do the stuff that I want to do. Of course I'll help if I can. This is what regular people are doing, the ones that aren't, you know, and then, but being fed a constant diet of, we're going to die, is, you know, it gets a little troubling.
There may be real reason for concern. I guess that's all I'm saying. While at the same time, there's a vast body of opinion in the middle who are not particularly perturbed one way or the other, except that, of course, they're not having as comfortable as a life as they expected to be having by now.
But they're also not getting information they need.
Pretty universal thing.
Right, but I'm sorry to interrupt, but the problem is they're not getting the information that they need to engage. This goes back to fourth grade.
That's true. That is true.
This goes back to fourth grade.
There is nothing that more guarantees apathy than hyperbolic reporting. I think that's a given. And yet, hyperbolic reporting still continues because it seems to sell copies
drugs,
of newspapers.
Lots of drugs.
It seems to grab eyeballs by the millions.
Right, which is one of the issues, if you will, with the screen-based model that we have. And you know, now trying to break through is just so. I would you know, my recommendation is people should actually, you know, take a break and find a topic that they're interested in and that affects them, and then try to get some information, real information off it, not opinion, but real information, and start getting those brain cells fired up. You know, what I'm trying to say is make
Absolutely.
Sure you know something about the topic, because again, I don't know whether this was intentional or not. Of course, you know, given my skepticism, I tend to think it was. But you've got more people running around. I just saw something the other day that cracked me up. Someone gave a bunch of kids an out of context phrase, and they immediately launched into the outrage, the racism, the this, the that, that, the that. It wasn't about Trump. You know what I mean? It's just no one is being encouraged to get the context. It's like, let me Instagram this moment. And I don't think that is a service. I think that is highly irresponsible.
That's always been the offense. That's been the primary offense of short attention span journalism. You end up giving people no context, and therefore you crank the material up to the hyperbolic, and that in itself is dangerous. Yeah,
and
I
then
agree.
Rinse and repeat. So that's the, you know, that's where it's really. It goes over a different sort of edge because you create apathy is the wrong word. People who should be engaged become terminally bored and go off and, you know, fix their gardens and play with their dogs and stuff. And it's just that doesn't help, because then you don't have those.
Yeah.
You don't have that participation, and that is the moderate participation that is always needed. One of the things that we joke about is, hey, who was in the room when everyone said, let's put all the data in one place? You know, who didn't look up and say, well, how's that? Well, do you think, you know, it's baffling. It's baffling. All right. Guess what? We actually stayed connected for more than 6 seconds. Equally baffling.
Well, I'm glad we did, and we repeated an important message that bears repeating.
Right. So we should pat ourselves on the back. You should go enjoy more of Chianti Shower, and we'll talk to you next week. Thank you very much, David Tereshchuk at the Media Beat.
Thank you.